And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 27th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. This is Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
We just had a long trip, and I'm not sure I can actually hear you unless I'm bouncing around on a two-lane highway with no radio on and a very uncomfortable Ford Fusion.
I actually thought the Ford Fusion was quite comfortable, but but yes, we just returned from a whirlwind trip of southern Louisiana and catching our breath here for a couple days before we head off to Philadelphia, Delaware, Baltimore, and all over western Pennsylvania next week.
Man, it's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. And, you know, we spend more time now in a car than we do in our houses. It's just ridiculous. But we saw a lot of poker this week and a lot of different rooms, so that's going to be a fun main topic to talk about later on. But, you know, before we did, we launched our trip with a short road trip for me up to your house for the home
game.
Yeah,
you know, I figured I wasn't going to be home for quite a while, so why not invite all my friends over to play poker in my home, so at least I have a memory of the home when I'm out on the road. And pretty good home game. You know, one of the things, we keep talking about this on the show, but I just keep, like, reminding our folks about it, but, you know, our home game is pretty darn good now.
Yeah.
You know, I was the big loser this last week with like 100 and some bucks, but, you know, when you're playing a 2-4 game where everybody buys in for 100 and the big loser is 100 bucks,
yeah,
you know, people were playing pretty good poker.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really learning a lot playing against the current group we have.
You know, we kind of like to emulate the big game. We call it the micro game, but, you know, we like to play all the normal games and then some of the ones that, you know, might not be normal but are considered, you know, poker games by the big guys. So we play them. And one of the games we play is single draw, no limit, deuce to seven, which I know is part of the, although I think they may cap it in the big game. I'm not sure. They may cap it like 100,000. So we need to do that. We need to cap it at 100,000.
Yeah, I have a feeling I know why you wanted to cap it. but yeah, we haven't played this one very often, but someone called it this time, and it turned out to be a pretty darn good game, didn't it?
It did, and there were a lot of big pots, and there was one hand in particular that came up between me and you, and Mike Fasso, our good friend the Bard, and it had us talking so long that people were like, are we still talking about that hand, like, two games later? So, I don't know, do you want to set it up or do you want me to?
Why don't you set it up? You always had the more crystal clear memory.
Okay, well, here's what happened. We'd been playing for a few hands, and Fasso was on my left, and you were on his left. Yeah. We were three monkeys right in a row there. And
just the way I like it.
Yep. and so I noticed that Fasso was raising a lot, because he thinks he understands this game really well. And I'm not saying he doesn't.
Oh, what a backward dig.
And that, yeah, I didn't mean it like that. I just mean that he's probably the one who's more well-versed than anybody else in the game. He likes it a lot. So I noticed he did that a lot. He would, even if somebody limped, he would raise because he felt like his 9 or his 10 was always good, or his queen. Sometimes he'll do that with a queen and stuff. So I looked down. I was like second or third to act, and I looked down at a 9-8-7 already made. So I had a feeling he was going to raise.
By the way, let me pause. A monster.
It is. It's a very good hand.
Single draw limit when you're almost in position.
It's a very good hand. There were still two to three people behind me at least to act, plus a limper ahead of me.
Let's not elevate us to players.
Okay, well, there are people sitting in chairs on my left. with chips in front of them and cards. So anyway, I had the same feeling I always have when I think Fastow was going to raise. I just had this feeling he was going to raise again. So I limped, hoping that he would raise and it would force everybody else out. It would get to me, and then I would probably shove because I only had at the time about 42 bucks. And if I was going to bet 24 because he raised to 8, I was probably going to shove. So anyway, he, just like clockwork, raises to 8, and I know I've got the best hand at this point. I just know it. But surprisingly, you min-raised to 16 bucks. And at this point, now you had raised, I think, at least one of the hands earlier and drew, so I knew that you probably wouldn't re-raise after a limp, a raise, and then you. So I thought for sure you had a pat hand already, and I had a hand that I'm going to stay pat with in this game for that kind of money. I would think you'd have to stay pat with a 9, and I had the worst 9 possible. So I thought about it, laid it down. Fastow calls and draws one, and you draw one, and I just, like, flip out. Now I'm thinking to myself, what the hell?
Time alarm, unreal.
And then you guys just, like, laid into me for how tight I was. And I was just like, for you, and you were the key to the whole thing, for you to min-raise in a no-limit game when you know that there's two limpers and then a raise to $8, to min raise to 16 bucks, I can't see myself shoving with 9-8 and staying pat. I thought for sure you had at least a 9, and my 9 wasn't good. But you guys were laying into me, and I just don't know. I don't know if I should have done that or not. And that's what we talked about for like 30 minutes.
Well, first of all, I appreciate your sentiment that you didn't know whether you could continue to play in that hand. I very much appreciated that, even though I ended up losing it. Yeah, anytime you get the best person, the best hand to raise.
Oh, no, you had it right the first time. The best person. Go ahead.
Oh, we'll put that to a jury of our peers, I believe. But anytime you get the best hand to fold, that is the successful raise, regardless of whether you end up winning the pot, which, of course, I didn't. But you know, here's the thing, Chris. I don't use a lot of over-the-counter medication. I prefer holistic remedies.
Yes.
But every once in a while, when I'm in a rush and I can't feng shui or whatever, you know, I grab a bottle of aspirin. And those things are so hard to get into. But here's the thing, Chris, you are tighter than any of those childproof caps that I've ever had to get off of any over-the-counter medication. A made 9 in a game where you have one draw. And you get 5 cards. I mean, you think of the times in Deuce of 7, even in triple draw limit, that you're dealt a made hand of 9. It's very few. And when you get it in a game where it's no limit and only one draw, Well, you know, we went back and forth and talked about this, like you said, for like 30 minutes. And in the end, I think really the only thing that I could really truly sleep well knowing I'm criticizing you over is not raising preflop. And I understand you all thought the little Fastow was going to do his little raise thing, and you're all trapping and stuff. And, you know, that happens when you get smarter than the players you're playing against. I don't know. If I was in your spot, and maybe it's just that I'm not very good at this game, I would have shoved right then.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. And I really wish we could have talked to Greg Rammer today. We just didn't have time to try to set that up and see what he'd say, because he's like, you know, genius on this game, obviously. And I don't know. I had a feeling, you know, sometimes you got to lay down the best hand every once in a while, too. And you know, it turned out, too, if I had shoved and called, Fastow would have called, you would have called, because there's only another from that 16, Fastow may have called. So,
yeah.
You know, but anyway, I would have lost.
We don't know what would have happened. Bad. Well, yeah, because you would have stayed pat, so the same card.
He ended up making a 9, 7. So.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, in my defense, I had a 7 perfect with a jack or something like that. Yeah, with a jack. Yep. And to me, I thought that was a monster. I mean, if I would have had your hand, I would have been salivating.
Yeah.
But I looked at my hand, and I'm like, you know, I've got a 7 perfect. I got a jack. I mean, if I'll raise here, I'll get you out. I mean, I'm sure Fastow will come along. He'll be a little tentative. He might draw a little bit more than he wanted to because I was in position.
Yeah.
And then I would just throw my jack away and not a whole lot of cards that could come that hurt. Of course, the one I get is queen. but it wouldn't have mattered anyhow. I mean, he drew and hit. But
you know what surprised me, though?
I was happy with my hand.
It did surprise me that you that you threw one away if you had a jack. Because right. You know how we talk about triple draw.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're against one opponent and you have a jack and they draw, you're a favorite. So I thought you would have stayed pat anyway. Since you got me out and you were heads up and he drew, I thought you would have stayed pat.
Yeah. And the more I thought about it, I mean, he drew one. I mean, this is what makes this game such a game of chicken. And why it's so tough is that you have no information other than the bets and the draws.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he made it, whatever it was, like 4x raise or something like that.
Right.
Really, he could have had a wide range there,
true.
I think.
True.
And so when he drew one, it's a good question. It's probably a coin flip whether I should just stand pat and hope he catches. Because if he doesn't catch, he can't bet with any degree of confidence and probably can't call with any degree of confidence.
Exactly.
But if he does catch, then he's going to bet into me, and I really can't call with my jack at that point, I don't think.
Right.
So since the rest of my hand was so beautiful, I figured it was probably better at that point for me to go ahead and draw. We're drawing mano a mano there. And still, if he misses, he's got a check to me, and I can put a bet in regardless. And if he does catch, I got a better chance of beating him than if I catch any other card in the deck, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the beauty of position in that game, really. That's the best part about it, is that you could do all. You have all those options in this game. But, you know, just to get back to it, you know, I just felt like you had a bigger hand. And you did. You had a big hand. I mean, it was just that, you know, you had the jack, too. But I just felt like that to do that in that position, you know, with all those people in the hand and a pretty big raise from, I mean, it feels like it's a big raise when you're playing $8 for
right.
one
oh,
draw.
Right, no, absolutely.
You know, I just felt like you had to have a hand there, and so I just let it go. But I don't know, maybe somebody out there is better at the game than we are and let us know if I made the wrong decision there and if you made the right one. But
I figured what Fasto
cool.
had. Fasto had like an 8 underneath and then a high card?
He drew a 9. He made a 9-7, so I think he had like a queen 9 and threw the queen away. And made his 9, but it was a 9-7, which would have beaten my 9-8-7.
Which, again, is a hand I would have raised with from his position, too.
Yeah.
I'd have been scared calling, which is probably all the more reason for me to stand pat.
Yeah.
But
so, pretty
interesting
scary.
Hand. Well, we'll see in the next home game that we have probably 6 months from now, because that's how often we have them now. So whether we can get another... I know you're going to be calling this, because you're going to want to redeem yourself.
Yes, because you're going to think I'm tight, and then I'm going to loosen up.
That's right, and I'm going to sit there with my 7 perfect that I was dealt, and you're going to break the table in half.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, and we should mention, too, though, is the debut of our new home game felt.
Yes. Yes, I was picking your nose throughout the day.
Pimp My Table up in Illinois. They do great custom felts, and they appreciate what we've done for them in the past. So he actually made a custom felt for us that had, like, our Annie Up logo and then, like, our silhouetted podcast logo.
Yeah.
So our heads are on the table now.
Big heads.
And he sent it to me a while back, and we just never got around to putting it on. And then one of our new good friends at Straight 8 Custom Tables down here in the Tampa area actually put it on for us. And we got to play with it, and pretty cool. Feel kind of cool, and we're going to drag it on the cruise ship, our sold-out cruise ship. So people might be able to play a little six-handed sit-and-goes on it.
Don't spill any drinks on my face.
Yeah, you know, because it's so hard to spill drinks on you.
Oh, don't even get into that yet.
Well, you know, before the home game, though, I experienced a little something online that I thought would be interesting to share with our listeners. I haven't been playing much. I mean, we've just been so busy. I hate keep saying that, but we just are.
We are.
And so it's nice when you can take a shot and play a little bit. And, you know, when I get time now, even online, like a multi-table term, it just takes too much time. So you know what? I'm like, all right, I'm going to get in a sit and go, and I'm going to dial down to the $5 level and just kind of relax, have a good, easy, fun game, right?
Yeah.
And if I don't cash, it's $5, no big deal. And, so we got in a half and half game, Chris, limit hold'em, no limit hold'em.
Oh, wow.
And, on Stars, they have that. And I'm like, hey, it was getting ready to fill up. I'm like, cool, I'll get in that. I really wanted a whole limit game is what I wanted to play, but no one was buying that. So I'm like, all right, I'll try the limit. No limit. And I dominated with a capital D-O-M. And I'm not saying that to brag. I just, it was so weird to not have played for so long online and then play that version and just brutalized people.
Yeah.
And so I guess what I took from that is that, one, at the $5 level, people don't know how to play limit. So I was just aggressive as anything in the limit. And then we got the no limit, you could tell people were just frustrated, and they just shoved every hand. And then you could just sit back and wait, and if you get good hands, boom, catch, and pick them off. Fish right. in a barrel. Fish in a barrel. Just like David Spade would say in Tommy Boy.
Not that
you
Not that I've seen that movie, but we talk about it all the time somehow.
And I'm not picking on our $5 players either, because we have quite a few listeners that probably even aren't yet to the $5 level. But it's just a different kind of game. And, you know, it's all the more reason to kind of step down. You know, if you're used to playing a $10, step down to $5. You're used to playing $5, step down to $1. And, you know, a little less pressure and, you know, your ROI overall is less, obviously.
Yeah.
But it can be fun, and you can work on some things in your game and do all right. And then I finished that game, and then I got into Zips. You know, one of our another fan tournament set up by some of our great fans. It's on Wednesday night on Poker Stars every night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I played like three or four of these, Chris, and I have finished no worse than third, I think.
Man.
Not picking on my favorite Zips players there, but somehow... a lame player like me is doing well in the series. So what I'm doing, this is a passive-aggressive way of trying to get all the listeners to get in the Zips and support those guys.
Well, yeah, that's a question that deserves to be answered, too. Are there just three players showing up every week, too, and that's why you're doing no worse than third?
Last week it was just me.
and you still finished third.
I sucked out on myself, so I didn't win. No, there was no limit hold'em a couple weeks ago when I played that last, and it was a textbook no limit game for me. I should have won it. I had a 10-1 chip lead or something and gave it away at the end, kind of get cute. So I finished second, but for the most part, the entire time, all the way up until that heads up with that one bad hand I had, I really felt like I was playing the best no limit of my life, which of course is great when you realize you're playing in a $1 tournament. But I think overall, both of these things is what it's told me is that that my game has come a long way.
Yeah, and I mean you've gone from 20 and 50 and $25 buy-ins to $1 and $5, and now you're succeeding. You're doing
yes,
great.
Yes, exactly, absolutely, absolutely. But you know, it's just a good reminder to you know sometimes you get frustrated playing this game. And sometimes it's good just to take a step back and go, you know what, even though I'm not running well now, I am still playing better poker than I did 5 years ago when I started. So there should be something to celebrate
yes.
in progressing in this game,
absolutely.
Even if it's a little small victory.
Absolutely.
Last week we had a phenomenal show, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, we were joking about how long it went on, and people, of course, were bashing us. Hey, you know, you can go on for 7 hours. I don't care. As long as you have Lee Giles on the show, that guy's awesome. So, you know, we don't have Lee on the show this week, but we did have him last week on a really, truly great hand of the week. And we did get a call from one of our listeners thanking us for the show.
This is Keith, a.k.a. Anti-Up King. Just finished listening to your podcast. What a great show with Lee Giles. And I do have to say that I have been playing my nines very similar to Chris. Which ultimately listening to Lee Childs even more enforces why I should be playing them like Lee. So I just wanted to let you guys know I really enjoyed the show. I learned something and up with poker.
Well, my plan worked to perfection. I wanted to take the exact opposite stance of what Lee would do to get some sort of contrast on the show, and everyone seems to play nines the way I was professing to play him on that hand of the week, and now they think they should play it like Lee. So now that noise you'll hear is thousands of people going broke across the country. No, but really, it's true. It's true that nines really are a confounding hand, and there are so many ways to play them. And I'm glad that you know people. Even if you go on our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, a lot of people are talking about that hand and the nines and how they should be played, and glad that Lee talked the way he did about them and that we had that little discussion. So really it was a cool hand, and thanks, Keith, for calling in.
And, of course, just a little bit of housekeeping here. Apes, your next chance to win a banana is tomorrow, this Saturday, August 28th, noon Eastern, always on Poker Stars. The game this week is a no-limit hold'em. Go to antiupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S, for the password and other relevant information. And, of course, if you want to try to get in the next event for free, that's coming up September 1st. 9 p.m. Eastern, and that's, again, No Limit Hold'em. So if you're No Limit Hold'em specialist, you're in the sweet spot. Next three tournaments, free rolls and apes combined, No Limit Hold'em.
Very good.
And I'm going to be there with my crazy bet sizing, so I'm going to frustrate the Zips players.
149. Okay, let's see what piled up while we were away on the Antiup News Desk.
Senator Harry Reid, a Democrat from Nevada, seen as a key to weather-regulated online gaming bills will get through the U.S. Senate, drew the ire of Northern Nevada casino executives this month when he told them that he would, in fact, support regulated online poker, though no other casino games. This comes from the Reno Gazette Journal.
Yeah, you know, I think even the Commerce had a guy saying that he would fight it because they didn't want it regulated in California. You know, it's find one who will and one who won't, you know. It's pretty
way to ruin the rest of the news desk there, buddy. Thanks for reading the notes ahead of time.
I was letting you know it's coming up.
You're a champ, buddy. You're a champ.
It's called foreshadowing. You learned that in third grade English.
But, you know, we see these little turf battles everywhere in poker. I mean, everybody, it's a competitive business. Any kind of business is a competitive endeavor, and people are trying to want to protect their profits somehow.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Anytime they see a threat, it's better to, and they're in some people's mind, better to stamp it out. I might disagree with that a little bit, and this is what we're seeing. You know, these casinos out there, like, hey, we're here first. You open up online, and then we're going to close up. And hey, lots of lost jobs.
Yeah,
remember that.
Yeah,
and so I don't know. For an online poker player, it's frustrating, but. You know, if I worked at a Northern Nevada casino, I'd probably feel a little differently.
Okay, Blanca Games has bought the Sirius Network, home of UBNet and Absolute Poker. And Blanca's CEO says the network's brands are well-positioned for success in the company's core demographics.
Yeah, I love the big words that we get in these press releases.
They said nothing's going to change, though. I mean, it's just a matter of changing hands, really.
And then finally, as Chris foreshadowed just 14 seconds ago, after Tom Malkuthen, the CEO of Commerce Casino, testified against U.S. Representative Barney Frank's Internet Poker Regulation Bill last month, a number of top pros are in the midst of a potential boycott of the poker-heavy property, Poker News Daily reports. Doyle Brunson and Greg Raymer are among those who have signed a letter to Commerce urging a change in their stance. While Andy Duke is among the pros who have already said they are boycotting the property.
See, now there's the real news, not what I said. The real news is Raymer and Brunson are warning these guys. Duke is boycotting. That's the news, buddy. I was just helping you out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and here's the real difficult thing in this. I mean, we're going through this in Florida. I think we've talked about it on the show, too. We've got a representative here who is trying to get an internet poker bill passed here in Florida. And you would think on the surface... hey, that's great news, guys. But, you know, when we read the bill, we thought, it's not a very good bill at all.
Yeah.
And actually, we're against it, right, as written. So we're trying to get it rewritten. So, you know, I'm not defending the Commerce dude because on balance, I think the Frank bill is a good one and it should be passed. But, you know, it's tough to say whether his opposition is completely profit-driven, as the pros seem to think it is, or whether he's looking to get it tweaked a little bit. But, you know, hey, the last thing you want to do when you've got, the most famous poker casino in California is to have a bunch of pros saying they're not going to show up.
Yeah. I think, remember when WPT had their big problem, too, with using their image and everything and Andy Duke and all of those, Greg Raymer.
Right.
You know, they're used to this boycotting thing. And,
even
though it probably really didn't make that big of a difference in the whole overall scheme of things. I like it when people stick to their guns and on principle, you know, they don't want to give in and they want to make sure they make a point of it. So, you know, good for them, and I really hope that this works out.
Well, yeah, and then the other interesting thing to watch is obviously this guy has put himself out there by testifying.
Right.
But, you know, truth be told, I think there's a lot of casinos around the country that are against this bill as well, too, and are not quite as vocal. So one of the problems with the pro boycott is what happens when people start talking about these other casinos that are against it. I mean, eventually, what are our pros going to just like end up in home games and online and not actually playing anywhere? I mean, that's where it's really going to test your mettle as a boycotter is, when you can't pick and choose which properties you want to boycott. So let's hope that we just get this bill passed and we don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have a phone? Do you have Skype? Do you have a way to call us? Because if you do, 813-448-1120. That's our hotline. You call it. Next time you do call, make sure you let us know who you are, unlike this week's caller.
Yeah, the unknown comic I'm calling him. If you don't put your name on it, you got a big grocery bag on your head and telling lame jokes. Should we listen to him?
Yeah, let's
Even though he didn't have a name?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure he'll come out of the woodwork once we tell him we're going to give him a shirt.
Hey, guys. I was in the Daytona Beach Kennel Club and Poker Room looking specifically for your magazine, and I couldn't find it. What's up with that?
Yeah, you know, this is frustrating, you know, because we send plenty of magazines to all of our the poker rooms, including the Pennsylvania and Delaware ones, which we just shipped last week. So if you're up in that area, check those out. They should be there. But, you know, what I tell people when they write in with this or call in is, you know, always ask the brush.
Yes.
If you don't see it out, ask the brush because, you know, we travel a lot. We see the rooms. The first thing we do when we walk in any poker room is look around to see where Annie Up is because we know we sent it to them.
Yep.
And the times that it has been out, by and large, it's because there's still a box behind the counter and the brush just hasn't kept up with putting them out.
Right.
And I'm not criticizing. It's tough to keep track of that. But you know, always ask because they might have some behind the counter. And if they say, no, hey, man, we're fresh out. We ran out quickly this month. Definitely let us know because that's a tip off that we need to be sending more to that particular property. And sometimes properties aren't great about asking for more or they feel bad about asking for more. But, you know, we have no problem sending them out if they're going to get read.
And it does depend on the time of what month it is, too. I mean, you know, if you're asking for them, you know, like in the 15th of the month or the 17th of the month, it could very well be all out. And there's not that we didn't send enough. I mean, you know, that's 3 weeks straight of the magazines being there and they could have given away, you know, a couple hundred copies. So just depends on when you're there, too. But make sure you ask. Always ask.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, and even though you have no name, you have one valuable piece of swag, Unknown Comic. If you make yourself known to us...
And you must call from that same phone number, otherwise
yes,
we won't
Yes, exactly.
Believe.
Here's the thing. We have caller ID on our hotline, so I have the phone number in my system. So if any of you little angle shooters out there are going to call the hotline and go, oh, yeah, hey, that was me, man. you better be calling from this guy's phone. To get the swag. But call in again on the same number, and we will send you a terrifically hilarious T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for guys and gals at PMSPokerware.com.
Hey, we got a mailbag. Go figure. Someone sent us
a new addition to the show.
his name's Brandon Largent, wondering if he's related to former Seahawks great receiver Steve Largent or not. Awesome. Same spelling. But do you want to read it? You want me to read it?
Yeah, I'll tackle this because it's a little lengthy.
And you're so good at reading things.
Yeah,
on the show.
Yeah, and I know that you're still at a third grade level, so yes. I don't want to embarrass you any more than
go
you have
ahead.
To. Here's what Brandon writes in, Chris. He says, little preview here. He's just now caught up on all of our – he's one of our late arrivers.
Right.
Caught up on all the past episodes, almost. And he says, I've noticed through the 130-plus episodes – that the topic of online poker being set up for action and the RCGs keeps coming up. Thanks, Chris. he said, I got to thinking about it and wondered whether either of us or the Annie Up Nation has thought about creating our own online poker site to compete with the other sites. And he says, I know there are a number of issues with attempting this, the biggest one I would think being money. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, now I've been thinking about this, and to help the money issue out some, I suggest that we talk to two major companies, Harrah's and the UFC, Chris. Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Yep.
He says, yeah, I know it's strange, but follow me for a second. All right, we'll follow you for a few more seconds because you went on and on. he says, they help us out by pushing the site at the casino and on the shows. In return, we plaster their names on the site and hold tournaments with the main prize being tickets to a UFC fight and a place to stay and play while there. Granted, this isn't the complete answer to the money problem, but I think it would help a good deal. He says, the beauty of having our own site is we could set it up to play more like it would be in a brick and mortar. Personally, I think if we make it to where the players don't have to worry about being sucked out on as much, then it would pull in the more serious players to our site. Plus, it would also give a new home to the Apes events, and it would be easier to set up the events and satellites. what do you think about a combo Annie Up Harrah's UFC poker site?
Well, first of all, Brandon, who's we? Are you... You're really thinking you're going to push it on our whole online site there, buddy? What's going on there?
It's his idea. He's
yeah.
copyrighted and everything.
Yeah, because
so.
We've never thought of that. Well, okay, lots of flaws with this one. Harrah's, Yeah, they're not going to just say, hey, why don't you? Like, they're not going to be able to start their own site and just kick our butts with it. So they're not going to help us start one.
Obviously, Brandon is still catching up on the shows, but once he does, he'll learn that, you know, Harris is knee deep in coming up with their own site already. And I'll be honest, I don't think they really need any up. So.
And the UFC, they are plastered with Full Tilt patches all over their fighters and all over the mats on all these UFC type things. And I don't think they're going to want to get involved with us since they already are involved with another online site. So there's another one that won't work. But if you come up with two more companies, let us know.
And wasn't Bodog involved in some mixed martial arts as well, too, at some point?
Yeah, I think they're all of the mixed martial arts are involved with some sort of online room at some point. So we're going to have to come up with our own fighting league now, too.
That might be interesting, the Annie Up MMA. That would be different.
The AU MMA.
So, you know, I wrote back Brandon. I kind of told him the same thing we just said, and I wasn't mocking him. I appreciated the creativity, but obviously the flaws we just mentioned, in addition to the money. I mean, I had looked back into this a long time ago just out of pre-earned interest, and it takes a lot of money to start one of these.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, for the licensing in whatever offshore company you're doing or a country you're doing it, plus, you know, setting up thing. And then the biggest thing is marketing. I mean, the number of these sites that start and have no money for marketing and then die like 6 months later because they think players are just going to magically find out about them on Facebook or something. So it takes a lot of money. But the last thing I thought was interesting, that we could set it up so it would play like in a brick-and-mortar room, Chris.
Yeah. How does that work?
Well, you know, I guess here's the thing that I think is interesting is the conversations that we've had in the past about being set up for action in RCG is people conspiracy theorizing. Look at that new word.
New word.
That is a thing of beauty. Conspiracy theorizing. That there's actually programmers in there to do whatever this is. So if you're going to market, hey, we've set up our site not to have suckouts and stuff. You are trumpeting to your players that you are messing with the computer program, which I don't think is probably the right way to go. I could be wrong, but I think what people want to hear is, hey, we haven't touched your software. It's completely random, and here's the proof, even though no one will ever believe it because no one believes anything like that.
I mean, it could be, too, that he's thinking along the lines of that Colorado company that time. I don't know if they actually survived or not, but they were trying to start that online site with only one deck.
Right.
Real live deck shuffling, so it was one deck. So, you know, if you can approve that it's one deck and, hey, whatever happens, happens, that's what they're maybe he's getting at that, like, we'll just try to prove to people that, yeah, it's not some random thing. It's actually a deck that's actually being shuffled, that's actually being dealt. Or whatever, but oh man, lots of trouble with this idea. But I love it when people are thinking for us. Gotta appreciate that.
We appreciate the creativity, and Brandon. Because of that, we will send you a beautiful deck of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Ante Up. They are not used online yet, but you know, you could deal some practice hands at home.
Yeah, you could.
Waiting for your angel investors to
set up his own brick and mortar with the J Design cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we get to solve a mystery today, correct?
We do. It's been a while, and I'm excited to solve one.
And it's called Case of the Heated Argument. It sounds like you know, a road trip between me and you as well. Okay, so let's hear part one.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the heated argument. We're late into a daily online tournament, and the levels are 250, 500, and the annies have started at 50. There are 400 players left of the starting field at 1,200, and this is going to pay 189 places. In this hand, I'm in the big blind, and I post my 500. My starting stack size for this hand, 10,000. Min position player raises to 1,000. His stack is 13K, and then folds around to me in the big blind with 9 of diamonds, 9 of spades.
I'm not afraid, sir. Could I have a moment of your time?
I want to think about what is warranted here. Do I want to play this aggressively or not? I decide to play aggressively, and I raise to 3,000. Now back to our mid-position player. He 4-bet raises to 9650, leaving just 3K behind and only 415 short of putting me all in.
This would be a big call.
What do you want to do here?
All right, well, I'm a little out of practice here, Chris, you know, because we haven't had a mystery in a couple weeks. But I'm going to do the best I can here. Again, we have the dreaded min raise here, don't we?
Yeah.
It's either a monster or a weak hand or just somebody that's just drunk. But since I'm not in the hand, it's probably either a monster or a weak hand. And so when we're re-raised, I'm inclined to give our opponent credit for the monster unless there's some untold reason not to. You know, like maybe we've watched this guy for a while. We know he's just crazy or something like that. But, you know, especially since this raise pot commits him. You know, with this raise, I mean, he can't fold to anything. So here's the thing. If we call, chances are we're racing or crushed and have too steep odds, in my opinion, of being shown the door in this tournament. If we fold, we still have 14 big blinds remaining, if my math is correct. It's not great, but it's enough ammo that we're not immediately panicked. So I'm going to fold here.
Okay, well, a couple of things off the bat. I don't think it's a min raise. We raised at 3,000, and the guy made it 96. That's more than 3x.
No, but he min raised before.
Oh, us. Okay. Oh, the guy, oh, the min raise earlier, you mean?
Yes, the first raise was his. It was a min raise.
Oh, okay, but then he re-raises us, right? So that's what gives it away. Okay, yeah, okay. So here's the thing. It's pocket nines, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what's funny? Is everyone played it the way I would have played it on the forum. You know, but whatever. I probably would have just called and seen a flop like I said last week. I probably would have seen the flop, and I realize I'm still not learning from Lee here, but since I'm forced to play it the way he did, I would fold. I would fold, and just that's it. You know, and like I said before, nines suck, and that min raise early on told me he probably had a hand, and when he comes over the top again, I have to let it go, regardless if he's making a move or not. I just don't think that, at best, I think I'm in a race, and I don't want to race for my chips here. But I did think it was interesting that it was nines the same week that we talk about nines last week.
Well, I think it's also a common theme with Colombo. He seems to have a higher propensity to want to race than certainly I do, but that's nothing because, you know, I'm almost as tight as you are.
Yeah.
and it's just a seven game. But he seems to like to race, and, you know, if that's his MO, that's great, but I'm not really into it. And so we went to the forum at AnimeUpMagazine.com forum to see what people there said, and 80% of them said, as played, importantly, we should fold. But all of them questioned why we initially raised so much. But one listener says that we've pocket committed ourselves now and regrettably have to call. So it sounds like everybody's unanimous in how Colombo played it. A little difference on what we have to do in this particular situation.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I'm gonna raise, that's what I would have raised. I would raise three times his bet. So I don't agree with why, or when someone says so much. I disagree with that. If I'm gonna raise, I would make it three, and it's still less than 25% of my stack. So I don't think I'm pot committed either. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just not good with the math. So, but let's hear part two and see how we all get embarrassed.
Welcome back. The pot is 13K, and we have 3K invested with 10K behind and an M of around 10. Talk about a tough spot.
You know, sometimes the right answer is, it's very hard to find, sir. It's not that, it's hard. That's all I'm saying, sir. It's not an easy thing.
I'm really struggling with his raise here. If he has ace-king, then he shoves here, period. 9650 puts him all in for all intents and purposes, so did he simply miss that? If I'm correct, this is a lack of awareness, or it's frustration on getting raised. But I think about my spot and the payouts, and even though I think he might have a hand here, I'm going to get it in and hope he doesn't have a pair. I'm honestly expecting a hand like King-Jack when I shove my chips in, but he calls the additional 415, and I'm surprised as he shows ace-10. Certainly a weak hand for a 4-bet. Ironically, the flop had a jack and the turn had a king, so if he did have king-jack, he would have hit two pair. But instead, I win the race, knock him out, and it was in a situation where his lack of chip awareness led me to make a call I might not have made otherwise. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you to know what the heck is going on in the hand.
This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, the important thing, Annie Up Nation, is that Chris and I survived. Can't imagine a world without us. You know, our heads become so big that that's all I think about is, you know, when the plane is crashing down, it's, oh my God, the Annie Up Nation is going to be really sad if we're not there every Friday. No, literally, we survived. And it wasn't the 600 miles on the back roads of Louisiana in a car, with me driving, by the way.
Yes.
That almost killed us. It was the flight home. And flight is probably a too strong of a word.
Oh, man.
I've been on roller coaster rides that were less scary than this thing.
And we should have known. We should have known when at like 8 in the morning we find out that our flight is delayed, that isn't taking off until 8 at night. That something is going to be wrong. Huh?
They knew it was going to be late.
Yeah, something was going to be wrong, you know. And then we're sitting in the airport, and all of a sudden it goes from 15 minutes late to on time. I'm like, Scott, we're actually going to be on time. They actually fixed. They must have made up time in the air or something. This is great. You know, we should have known at that point, you know, what the hell's going on with this flight? It's doomed. We get on the plane. They rush us on like cattle. You know, they all want to go home. You can feel it. We actually board early now. Instead of being late, we board early. We're on the plane at precisely 8 p.m., 15 minutes early. And then 15 minutes later, we're still on the plane. No explanation, nothing, just sweating our you know, it's like no air conditioning. All right, what's going on? 8:30, still on the plane, still no explanation. Finally, the captain comes on and says, yeah, we noticed a leak in one of the wheel drums wells or something, and our contract mechanic is on the way. And we're like, oh, great. So we're sitting there, all of a sudden, you hear everybody turn on their Blackberries and phones, yeah. And, you know, they're getting all back on, and everybody's hemming and hawing. And we've got these, you know, the worst part, too, is one of the, you know, you always like it when it's a light flight, when there's not a lot of people on it, because you can sit anywhere, probably going to be close to the front, get the hell off. But the way it worked out, you know, and we sit together at some point, so we ended up being in, like, row 30 somehow, which I don't know how that happened. We had a full flight on the way in, same seating positions, but we ended up being, like, in row 5. But on the way home, we ended up having to sit, like, in row 30. And what's worse is we get two drunk young couples sitting right behind us.
Oh, boy, they were annoying. No screaming baby on any flight ever in my life has been annoying as these trust fund kids behind us.
Oh, man. And so first they had three of them sitting together right behind us. Then they said, oh, I can't sit next to you. You're too obnoxious. And then the other ones went over to the other side. So they had two people on one side, two people on the other, and they're screaming to each other and, like, in profane, just uneducated, ignorant freaking, which is the same as uneducated, but I don't give a shit because I really want them to understand how stupid they are. And it was just they were offending everybody, and they were drunk. So, you know, we're sitting with that for an hour, which was basically how long the flight was going to be. So, you know, why couldn't we have just not had them there? I don't know. We should have just sat apart and sat in close seats. But so finally at 9 o'clock, an hour in, what happens? They say, all right, everything's fine. We're pushing off. And that's right when you had your laptop all fired up.
Yeah, I finally got tired and fired the laptop and bing, we're ready to go.
So we take off, pretty uneventful. We're flying for about 25 minutes. And then the captain comes on. He's like, we're about to start our descent into Tampa, but you know, there's a little bit of weather, some rain, so you might feel a few bumps. Yeah, that is called the understatement of the young century. Okay, this guy, you know, he has no grasp for what's coming up. I guess he didn't want to make us nervous, but oh my God, Scott, this was like any of those freaking movies from the 70s where, you know, lightning is striking the wing. And I mean, I literally would have hit my head on the overhead thing had I not had my seatbelt on. It was that bad, the turbulence. Our flight was like constantly on 45 degrees, too. We were never flying straight through this stuff. It was scary.
And wow, it was, boy, that plane was almost like on a 90 degree angle at one point.
It was.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Brutal.
I'm sure it was like more like a 47 degree angle, but at the time, it was pretty crazy. And wow, but we survived.
But you could hear people praying, crying. Lady behind me, the drunk broad, because I'm sorry I'm calling her that, but that's what she was. There's a term for her, and that's what it is. Spilled her entire tomato drink.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, I guess it was a Bloody Mary. Yeah. All over my back. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that was my drink. I turned around, I said, why do you still have a drink? We're landing, and you're not supposed to. They took all the. Oh, they didn't take it from me. I said, no, you probably hid it. You drunk lush. Oh, my God, all over my back. I get home, my shirt's all red, and, oh, man, I soaked it, and hopefully it's going to be clean. But that was the worst flight ever. Ever.
Well, good thing we only have, like, 27 flights coming up together. So, you know, we'll be in a good shape.
Oh, man.
And previous to that, Chris, we survived a violent crime.
It was coming. We knew it was coming.
We came out of the hotel on our last night, got in the car. You were putting stuff in the trunk. I was getting the GPS unit out of the glove box, and gone. Not there. So we look around like, you know, crazy people, like under the seat. Yeah, maybe I actually put it under the seat, or maybe I put it on the roof of the car like I thought it was a fire, police siren or something. And, of course, nope, gone. And you look at the back seat, like, yeah, your case is gone too. So... Sometime in the middle of the night, in the parking garage of the hotel, someone entered our car, probably because, as I later deduced, I was an idiot, probably didn't lock the car, and five-finger discounted my crappy old GPS unit.
Yeah.
And then immediately said, wow, don't you feel violated, Scott? That was a violent crime.
It was. They broke our space, man. They entered into our space and stole something from us. That's how I feel. But here's the thing, too, is when it first happened, I just felt terrible. I didn't say anything. I just sat there quiet because we've used this GPS, like, a lot, you know. And I mean, I feel like I know the lady who's talking to me.
Yeah, we have some history.
And, you know, so I felt really bad. And then once you said, you know what, the thing never really – the maps aren't really updating. It's kind of, like, pissing me off, and I really want to buy a new one, so – and I need to get a new one anyway. And so I was like, after that, I didn't feel so bad because I felt like, you know, you were probably going to get rid of it soon anyway. So the thing is, though, and I wasn't going to say this until you said that, so now I'm going to say it. Every time we get out of the car, I say to you, you sure you want to leave the GPS there like that?
But and I put it in the glove box.
I know, but you're like, nah, it's all right, it's all right. I said, oh, okay. And then you didn't lock it, and I was like, I didn't know you didn't lock it, obviously, because I thought when you – you have to lock it. I thought, but
you push your buttons and you're.
Yeah, but you know, I was like, oh my God, the GPS is stolen, and I feel like, and I think I had just said something about it too, like the stop before that, and oh, I feel so bad. I was like, see, if you listened to me, oh man.
Here's
so,
the thing: who steals a GPS?
I know.
These things, the resale value are less than VCRs now.
Well, maybe they just want to use it. They really just want to use
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what the guy in the middle of the night roaming around a casino. Is looking for is to outfit his own car.
Well, what good is a GPS if you can't use the GPS to find the GPS? Maybe we should call up TomTom and say locate it for us.
Yeah, there should be a low jack on it.
Yes.
Right?
Give them a call, man. See if they can find the jerk who stole it.
All right. Well, we'll get on to talking about poker here for the five people that are still remaining listening to the show. And the purpose of our trip is obviously, you know, we keep expanding. And we expanded up to Louisiana many months ago, probably 8 months ago, and finally found the time to get up there and check out the rooms. And so we did a whirlwind tour, 3 days, 600 miles in the car, as we mentioned. Hit Amelia Belle, Cypress Bayou, / Shorties.
Yeah, two casinos in one.
Yeah, yeah. Isle Lake Charles, Coushatta Casino, Paragon Casino, Belle of Baton Rouge, Boomtown, New Orleans, whew, and Harrah's, New Orleans, all in 3 days.
Pretty quick.
I had a good time. It was very interesting. And, you know, every time we go on these things, on these little road trips, as we call them, we notice some regional differences or traditions in that particular region that you don't really find anywhere else.
Right.
And in this market, the definitive thing was, if you're going to play poker, it's going to be 4-8 limit hold'em or 2-5 no limit hold'em.
That is right.
And except in Harris, New Orleans, no one does 1-2. You're going to play 2-5, and there's going to be some money on the table, as you found out.
And I was never more happy than when they said, no, sorry, at the aisle, we only have 2-5 no limit, because I was like, okay, good, I can go to sleep, because I'm exhausted. I really didn't want to have to play 1-2 no limit. And then you're like, well, there's a 4-8 seat. And I'm like, nah, I ain't playing 4-8. And, you know, and the main reason that I didn't play the 2-5 is because it was late at night, and it was the only table running all day, and everybody had like $5,000 in front of them. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't sit down with my money there. There's no way. I didn't bring enough for that game. I was bringing enough for a 1-2 game, not for or a 1-3, you know, so I didn't play. And you're right, though. Everywhere we went was 2-5, and I ended up being forced to play 4-8, which turned out okay, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, and then at least one casino had a 3-6-12 game, which I thought was very interesting. It was just getting going when we left, and then we found out in the rest of our drive that that used to be the standard in the area was 3-6-12, and everybody switched to 4-8. So, but yeah, so if you're going to go to the southern Louisiana, you better be a 4-8 limit player or a 2-5 no limit player. Probably not going to find anything else there.
Yeah.
And the other very interesting thing I thought, Chris, was almost every manager we talked to there had been at the property since they opened 16 years ago when casino.
That was pretty much the standard line there. Like, so how long have you been in poker? Well, I've been here since the building opened. And when was that? About 16 years ago. So you've been here 16 years, yeah. Oh, my God. You know, in Florida, people are checking their watches to tell you how long they've been there. These guys have been there their whole working careers. It's remarkable. And it seems to be, you know, every room.
16 years. That was crazy. I mean, I thought it was amazing the first guy that told us that. And the second guy, I'm like, wow, it's another one. And then, like, three or four or more, I'm like, wow. I mean, so that speaks well to, you know, when you got employees that are willing to stick around and you know, they don't get fired or and they want to stay there. I mean, that's a good thing, I think. So
Yeah. But, you know, we did find that specific markets or specific rooms had their own sort of you know, group of people that came in, and they all had their own little niche kind of thing for their rooms. You know, Amelia Belle, Cypress Bayou, which again is they have that brand new casino part of it called Shorty's, the Paragon, Belle of Baton Rouge, and the Boomtown, New Orleans. They always had locals in their rooms. That was basically the old salts just showing up for a game.
Yeah, and then we, you know, spent the night at Iron Lake Charles and hit Quixada the next night, and both of them they're the farthest west.
Right.
Louisiana down there, and they have a little friendly competition going on for these Texas players, players that come up from Houston, particularly on the weekends, and where they get some bigger games going. But well, they definitely not only draw from the local area, but really advertise heavily over in Houston.
Houston, yeah. They're really competing for those Texas players, yep. And then, of course, Harrah's, the most commercial of all the properties, of course, gets all the tourists. And they're in the perfect spot to do it, downtown New Orleans. And sure enough, they were the busiest room probably of all the rooms that were there. And they had a lot of tourists there. But, you know, it was funny. When we were playing, I would say almost everybody at that table we played with at Harrah's was a regular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly they get their share of locals there.
Yeah.
But I think the reason they get their share of locals there is because they know there's going to be some tourists.
Yes.
Quite a few tourists coming in, and a lot of them probably stumbling in off Bourbon Street with those $20 hurricanes and the big plastic tubes and beads on their neck, and I mean, who wouldn't want to play against those players?
And the biggest surprise of the trip easily was Cypress Bayou / Shorty's, don't you think?
Yeah, so we're in a small town called Charenton, I believe, and probably in between Amelia Belle and Isle Lake Charles. Really kind of not really convenient to get there from anywhere. That's why they're mostly a locals casino. But
right.
But wow, I mean, we just were floored.
I couldn't believe how nice it was, especially, you know, when you first pull up, you see this really cool building, and you're like, oh, Shorty's, is that like a nightclub? What is that thing? You know, it's this round building, and you can tell it's newer, and then you see the other casino, and it's like most typical backwoods casinos where it's like, you know, basically a square building with a big tower that says casino on it, and you're like, oh, man, what's this going to be like inside? And when you get in there, it's just, wow, it's like Vegas-esque. I mean, it was really nice.
They really thought the whole thing through from
yeah.
the original casino to the new casino. I mean, a lot of good restaurants with a lot of good food and different real takes. I mean, every casino has a lot of different food options, but they really did seem to think that they really did put a lot of thought into that. The floor was set up well. The poker room was very nice, I thought, too.
Yes.
The way it's laid out and some of the things they do there. No rake on tournaments there.
Yeah, no rake on tournaments. That's just crazy.
They use it as a loss leader to get people in. So.
Yeah, if they want to get people in. And you know what? They make their employees happy, and that's how they make their players happy, because the employees treat their players so well. And it was pretty amazing what they do for their employees, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I had found a company out there that treated me the way they treat their employees there, we would have never started Annie up.
Yeah, thank God we didn't work for Cypress Bayou, because
I would have been a lifer
doing this. But, I mean, you know, it was just incredible. They had
bread for lunch every day, free, and they have. I know you love this too, but they had like little flat screen TVs at the booth in the employee cafeteria.
Yeah, you're eating lunch, you can have your own TV. I mean, and there's other things too. They do trips. They have like a huge bonus every month for the employee of the month, and they have an employee poker tournament. And it's a real tournament. It's not some, come on in and play for, a day off of work or something. I mean, it's a nice tournament. They let them play in their own room, and just not in cash games, but they let them play in that tournament. And it was just, you could see everybody was so nice to us, no matter who we talked to, whether they knew us or not, or whether they knew what we were doing there or not, they were so nice to us. And it reflects, and, when you're happy at work, you're happy the way you treat people. It was a great situation.
Yeah, either Forbes magazine or Fortune magazine. Somebody needs to find this company and do a profile on it, because that is the way to treat your employees.
Yes. Well, let's get into some of the poker that we did. We had some playing up there. We actually did find some time to play, unlike some of our other road trips. And why don't you kick it off?
Well, yeah, this is the most amazing part of this entire trip, Chris, because I did something that's never been done in the history of poker.
Now, that's hard to do. Considering history of this game.
Very, very proud about this. I'm sure I'm going to be on the Today Show to talk about it after I announce this. But never in the history of poker has someone who is stuck in a game and then said, you know what? I'm going to play one more round around, see if I get unstuck. Has no one in history has ever did that, said that, did it, and then actually got unstuck. I am the first one ever in the history of poker to do that. And I left with a $6 profit after being down $120. I made $128 or $126 in one circuit around the table. Phenomenal. Usually anybody that says that ends up going broke.
Right. Well, congratulations, buddy. Well, I'm very happy for you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure my picture will go up at Isle Lake Charles pretty soon.
I'm sure James McManus will print an addendum to his incredibly long book on the history of poker just for this one moment.
And it was just amazing when that happens. I flopped a set and turned into a boat, and the guy had the other card. I had pocket jacks, and it was jack 9 9, and he had ace 9, and it was just a perfect storm.
Yeah.
And then I hit another set after that with pocket nines, the new favorite hand apparently of the Indian Nation. And I looked down at my chip stack, and I'm like, wow! And I'm like, please, big blind, get here quick, because I know I'm going to lose it all back. Started those chips up and walked out $6. Never happened, and was very, very excited about that.
Well, the thing about the 2-5 game is that it forced me to play 4-8, and both times I played with you, and it was... It's an interesting situation, and it was funny too. The first two pots that I won, the first pot I won where did we play first? Bella Baton Rouge, was trip deuces, and yes. The guy had an ace, and I won. It was the first pot I won, and then the first pot I won at Harrah's was a set of deuces. It was really weird. It was kind of like kismet, but I enjoyed it. It's weird to play limit like that because my stack goes up 20, down 20, up 30, down 20. You know what I mean? It's so weird because you get involved in a hand. You always have to keep betting $8 or whatever. It's, yeah, whereas in No Limit Hold'em, a lot of guys like to control the pot size. But no, boom, $8, boom, $8, boom, 16. It doesn't matter what you do. You're going to commit like $30 to a hand if you're playing it. And it's pretty brutal. But I ended up winning, so I was happy. I won both sessions, and it was profitable. And as we're walking away from the Harrah's game, I said to you, was that typical of a 4-8 game? Because that was pretty soft. And you're like, well, if it's the lowest game, yeah. But if they had a 2-4 option as well, it probably would have been tougher. So I'm just happy that that I got to play in the softer 4-8 games. and walk away with profits. But, you know, and like you said earlier in the show about how far we've come, I mean, really, you know, five years ago, if I had to sit down a 4-8 game because I couldn't play 1-2, I'd have been broke in 15 minutes. And instead, I walk away with over $150 for two-hour sessions. So I was pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I tried to get all the casinos to spread a no-limit single draw 2-7 game for you, but no one would bite, unfortunately. So, but you know, obviously we also see some interesting rulings when we go on these trips, and yeah. I thought there were two that were very interesting. And the first one came at the Isle of Lake Charles on the first night. We were in the 4-8 game. You'd gone to bed, and we were down to 7-handed, and they had 3 games going. And all of them were less than full. Not short, but less than full.
Right.
And one of the players at our table said, you know, hey, how come they don't combine the tables? And the dealer said, well, I'm pretty sure they won't, but I'll call the floor over if you want. And they're like, yeah, who wouldn't want to have more players, this old lady says. And I'm like, you know, maybe those of us that like shorthanded play, but, you know, whatever. So the floor came over, and the owner said the player's requesting that you break this table and redistribute them to the other. And he went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 players! That's a full table. I'm not breaking a full table. And stormed away.
Yeah, I wouldn't break it either.
And I wanted to clap my hand and say, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That is the way you treat people that are crazy at the game. I mean, 7-handed, come on!
I know.
These people get freaky when it gets down to 6 or even 5, but 7-handed, come on!
I love it, 7-handed. Oh my God, I'd pray for that.
Kudos to that excellent floor man there. And eventually what happened is one of the other tables that had less than 7, when one more person got up and then they broke that table. That makes sense. That's what people think players need to understand, that, you know, these rooms don't exist to completely fill every game.
That's right.
You know, they're the business of the big rake. And some people want a shorthanded game or want a 7-handed game. I was happy with the 7-handed game.
It's nice. It's a nice flow. You get a lot more hands. You know, your starting hands go up. I love 7-handed. I'd prefer 5-handed, to be honest, but they won't do that. But yeah, I would want to play 5-handed if I could.
These rocks, they're just destroying. I used to be a rock, and now I'm not. And they're destroying the game, and I feel bad that I was destroying the game for so long. And then we got, you know, here's New Orleans the last day, and you know, even though they don't distribute our magazine yet for reasons that we still can't explain, I still like the fact that they deal a 4-8 half and half game there, Chris.
Yeah.
Half Hold'em, half Omaha High. It's always a fun game. You don't get that anywhere else. And so, you know, we interviewed the manager there, went to get some lunch. At that point, they just opened a table. They had one person on the wait list. We ate lunch. You made me trounce through the bowels of New Orleans for some reason I don't understand, sweating like a dog and stuff, and finally I got back to Harrah's, and I'm like, yes, I'm going to play half and half. I went up to put my name on the list. 16 people on the list. No game going. It's just a list of interest. So the game must have broke in the 2 hours that we were at lunch. And so I asked the floor, I'm like, put Scott L on the list, as I always do when I see a list that long. Hey, you going to open a game pretty soon?
Yeah, really? That's two games right there. That's two games.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I can't do it. You know, all our 4-8 limit games are shorthanded, and we don't have the wait list to back it up. I'm just going to be breaking down tables to create another table. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess give me the 4-8 game. I'll suffer there until you open up the other game that I really want to play that apparently 18 other people want to play. So, you know, I'm not criticizing them. I mean, I guess there's some genius in the fact that, I mean, I've heard this before. I mean, no poker room manager ever wants to break a table down of a game going on. But I haven't seen it in this kind of format before where there's so many people wanting to play one game. I mean, I understand that when there's like 7 people on a list or even 10 that want to start a game and they're just going to take players from the other games and there's no wait list. I get that, but there's a lot of people that want to play this half and half. So, you know, if they created 2 tables of half and half, and they lost 1 table to 4-8.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like it probably would have worked. But, you know, I've never run a room, so I'm not criticizing. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely there. I think that if they really had 16 people in that room who were going to play half and half, they easily would have been able to just break 1 table because the 8 from there would have filled the other tables up or whatever. And, you know, hey, you got to break a table, you make it a must move or whatever. You do what you got to do. But I put my name on the list, too. I was right behind you, and then – you know, obviously we both sat down together at the same 4-8 limit But, you know, it was just, to me, I thought it wasn't right. I thought, you know, you're there, sure, you're running a room, and it's your room, and you can do whatever you want with it, but without us, you're not running a room. You got to do what we want to do, and 16 guys want to play half-half, and you'd spread it normally. You need to start something. That's just not right. So I don't know. I mean, I would have liked it because I love playing Omaha High Only Limit. I love playing that. And it would have been fun to play that 4-8 with a bunch of, you know, guys who played all the time or, you know, tourists trying it out for the first time. I was disappointed.
Well, hopefully next time. But, you know, at least even though we're disappointed, we did find time to have a few laughs along the way, as we always do. On these trips. I mean, how can you go over this many poker rooms and not have something to laugh about, right?
Our entire trip, I think, can be summed up in one word. Furniture. What the hell does that mean? You know, we're driving through, you know, Ned Beatty country, and there's
you
a
know,
sign.
Little tiny roads.
These roads, and they're winding, and they're bumpy, and there's potholes, and we're like, even the GPS is like, do you really want to turn left here? You know, I mean, it was crazy. So we go by this furniture store, and on the sign it's spelled Furnijure, furniture store. And it wasn't because they were being cute. That's how they thought they spelled the word furniture.
Yeah, just, oh, it's furniture.
Furniture. I thought, oh my God, we are definitely deep in it now, man. Yeah. Hit the gas.
It made me think of the folks that you see on the Sunday on the NFL broadcast with, you know, big Brett Favre posters totally hacking his name because they just, you know, they're spelling it with what they think is phonetically at the time. So yeah, I'm quite certain that sole proprietor there thought it was actually furniture.
I mean, there was no mistake in it, man. That's the way they thought it was spelled. It was not intentional.
Oh, we absolutely appreciated the kindness that these poker room managers show us when we get on the plane and fly out to see their property. And at the Isle of Lake Charles, they actually gave us separate rooms, so we didn't have to share a room this time.
Which was cool.
And so I walked in, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty big. I wish I was staying here more than one day, because I'm not going to be able to use this entire room. And I noticed in the bathroom, they had one of those big two-person jetted jacuzzi things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm never going to use that anyhow. But it's kind of cool it's there. And so then when I went to pick you up for dinner, you were like, we're walking to the elevator, and you're like, man, that's kind of weird that the jetted tub is right next to the bed, isn't it? And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, back up. Yours is by the bed? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, dude, we're getting out of the elevator. You got to show me this right now. And we walk into your room, and sure enough, your tub is exactly where it was in my room, except in my room, the wall was on the other side of it.
Yes.
It was enclosed in the bathroom. Your room, the wall was on the different side of it, so it was hanging out there right by the bed and the TV. So, you know, I'm going to call it the little honeymoon suite. And you didn't have a honeymooner with you, I hope, right?
No, my bride left me. I was in tears all night, crying next to the huge hot tub that I could literally rest my feet on from the bed, and the mirrors. Of course, it's a honeymoon suite. They put a mirror next to the hot tub. You know what that's for. So it was, you know, and you know how you know it's a honeymoon suite, too? Because they put it in a place that was next to the noisiest spot in the entire hotel. There was the elevators were behind my wall, so every time somebody used the elevator, you could hear the counterweight release, and then, shoom, you could hear it going up and down, up and down. The ice machine was next to that, so I could hear people filling their freaking buckets. And then, like, the water would fill the ice machine, so you hear the pipes running the water. And, of course, the people next to me wanted to use their hot tub. And the hot tubs are so big that it takes forever to fill. So when they're running their jets full steam, I couldn't sleep. It was, I mean, I did fall asleep because I was so tired. But, oh, my God, the noise was just – it was ridiculous. Everything was – and then, of course, the TV, too. The TV, you know, hummed. Instead, so if you turn the volume down a little bit so you want it to be quiet, the hum was louder than the volume. It's like, oh my God, all these things were so loud. And I was trying to sleep, you know, but I was so tired I ended up going to sleep anyway.
Yep, and I slept like a baby all the way down the other side of the hallway. So Scott 1, Chris 0.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
Oh, but that's all right. The I got my comeuppance a couple times on this trip. First of all, one of the rooms, you know how you're at the poker table and you always find somebody you want to hate, right?
Not me. I love everyone.
Of course you do. So I found myself hating this guy in one game. And I couldn't explain why I hated him. I had no reason to hate him. I just hated him. You know, he was doing little tiny things that might annoy you, but not enough to come to the rise to, H-A-T-E, you know?
Yeah, my mom said you shouldn't use the word hate, you should use dislike.
Right, exactly. And so I just couldn't explain it, but I just, the guy just, he got on my last nerve. And fortunately, it was his buddy that I took that huge pot off, so it all worked out well. But the next night when we were at the next casino, I did find a new person to hate. And it is what I'm going to call the unhappy that he has to wait for a big game jerk.
Yeah.
And we were sitting there, I was playing 4-8 limit like I always do. This little kid in his little track suit sits down, and you could tell that he wants to play the 2-5 no limit. You know, probably has money all over him,
yeah.
But there's no seat there, so rather than just hang out and wait, he wants to get in the 4-8 limit game and be a jerk. And let everybody know, hey, I'm waiting for the big game, so I'm gonna make fun of you kids in the kiddie pool. And so every time it's, how much can I bet? You know darn well how much you can bet. It's a 4-8 limit game. It's either 4 or it's 8. When it raised, it's 4 or it's 8. So none of this, how much could I bet? And the owner would be like, $8. Okay, then 8. And he throws an 8 out. Oh, I hated that guy. And yes, you can tell your mom I'm saying hate for this guy. The other guy, strong dislike, this guy, jerk, with a capital J-K.
Capital J-K.
Absolutely terrible. But you know, also at that casino too, not a dislike or hate, but I did think it was funny that I came into a food and beverage service specialist that I had this problem with. You know, we got there and I ordered a beer, and then I realized, you know what, I'm only going to be playing for another hour. Might as well take advantage of the comp liquor, you know, because yeah. You know, I get my scotch in a restaurant, it's going to cost me an arm and three legs. So I might as well take advantage of it. So the cocktail waitress came over and asked me if I wanted anything to drink. And I'm like, yeah, can I get a Johnny Walker Neat? What that? I'm like, what? I'm like, Johnny Walker. No, she's like, Neat, what's that? And I'm like, oh, okay, all right. I'll give her a pass, you know, because, you know, only 87-year-old guys order their drinks neat anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, no ice. Oh, okay, all right. But what's a Johnny Walker?
Oh, jeez.
And I actually stared at her, and I'm like, huh? And she's like, what's a Johnny Walker? And I'm like, scotch? I was dumbfounded. And she was like, okay, I'll get you scotch. And I'm like, yeah, can you also bring me a pencil? And she's like, a pencil? And I'm like, yeah, because I want to gouge my eyes out. That someone whose job it is to bring drinks to players has to ask what a Johnny Walker is.
You know, it could have been her first day, man.
I don't care whether it was her first minute. Should there be some kind of interview process for cocktail waitresses?
Man, I'm rubbing off on you.
Welcome to Joe's Casino. You want to schlep drinks between the bar and players? Yeah, I do. Well, why don't you just name a couple of the most famous liquors ever made? And if you don't get them right, you don't get the job, I don't think.
You know, it's clear that we've been hanging around way too long. I mean, I'm definitely rubbing off on you. You never had this vitriol before. You are just really harsh today. I don't know, man. We need to take a break for each other. Fortunately, we'll be taking another trip like this in 3 days. Oh, man, but that is hilarious. I can't believe that she didn't know what neat was, and then she didn't know what Johnny Walker. And it's funny. It's like you're like, Johnny Walker neat. She's like, huh? No, what's neat? And then she goes back.
Yeah, it goes back. She's like, wait a minute. I just realized I didn't know what anything this guy was ordering was. But, yeah, on Facebook, the questions were, the question was, Scott, did you tip her? And as I explained, I believe a proper education of the world scotch should have been tip enough for this woman. I want her to advance properly in her chosen vocation. But I gave her a buck anyhow. So, yes.
Well, the question is then, was it Johnny Walker? Can you identify Johnny Walker when you taste it?
That is a good question. I probably would not wager money on it, but it tasted darn good.
Okay.
Probably because I had to work so hard to get it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and you made reference earlier about me forcing you to walk the streets in New Orleans, which, by the way, I have come to known as the art of breathing through your mouth, because it stank so bad wherever we went. I was like, you know, we go to this, finally, you're taking me to holidays. I'm like, Scott, let's just find a place to eat. And you're like, oh, I don't want to go here. I was here before. Well, last time I was here, and I'm like, Scott, just find something. So we find this place called Oceana something, and I get in there, and she's like, two? And I said, yeah, and please put us as far back as possible. And she looks at me like I'm from another planet, and we sit down, and I'm like, well, it's because of the stank. If you sat in the close of the restaurant, I would have smelled the garbage the whole time while I was eating. So we went in the back, but the food was really good. Going from buffet to buffet and stuff like that, you know, whatever. Oh, man, I had this redfish with a crawfish sauce, and oh, it was so good, and I was happy we ate there, but I was very happy we ate in the back, and I couldn't smell the garbage.
Yeah, you can tell that Chris Cassens has not spent a lot of time in New Orleans when when he's the only one in town that smells the trash.
It was brutal, and it only got worse because we kept going further and further out, and it kept getting hotter and hotter, and I'm like, just find a restaurant, man. But we had fun. I got to see most of the stuff that, you know, you hear about, you know, and Bourbon Street and all that stuff. So it was cool. We had a good time. I was glad we went, and, probably a lot more fun if we had more time. Is that the end of the show?
Maybe. Is it?
Should we move on?
I guess we should probably do something else, right?
Yeah, let's wrap up the humor portion of the show by saying we're going to the Hand of the Week.
Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Lily had two queens, she was hoping for a third to match her pair.
Okay, Chris, well, you know, it's just kind of a perfection that this all happened this way. You spent the week playing Limit.
Yes.
A game that you used to despise. Now that you've kind of come to an agreement with it. I wouldn't say you like it yet, right?
I wouldn't say I like it, but I liked making money on a trip.
You're coming to agreement with it, and our hand of the week this week just happens to be a Limit Hold'em hand.
Oh, my God, it's kismet.
This comes from Will, all the way from Perth, Western Australia.
Wow.
Home of Heath Ledger, I believe, correct?
The former home. He's dead.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's there now. Just not doing much.
That's true.
Yes. It comes from online, Poker Stars. It's a 3-6 limit hand online.
Okay.
Are you ready to put your new honed skills to the test here?
I guess so. I'm going to fail miserably, I think, but I'm going to do my best. It's a 3-6 is too low for me. I can only play 4-8. You know, so.
Remember, it's online, though, so it's really like 30-60.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so then it's over my head then. So either way, I'm covered.
All right, well, looking around the table here, chips range from 73 to 260, so for the most part, I think everybody's got enough to cover themselves in this hand if they need to. Blinds are 1-3 in this game, and we have one caller, and we look down at 10 of diamonds, 10 of spades.
A hand that I did not see the entire weekend.
Pocket pairs were a rare form for us, and when you did get them, you lost with them, didn't you?
Yeah, I had pocket kings three times, I lost with them twice, and I beat you once with them. And I almost laid them down because of you and your persistence, but I ended up calling at the end and making a little decent pot. But yeah, those only pocket pairs I had were kings, and I lost two out of three with them. So tens were, I never even saw those, not once. I barely even saw a 10 in my hand.
All right, well, we're under the gun plus one. We've got a limper involved. If you had gotten tens, what would you have probably done in this situation?
I would have raised.
Absolutely.
And since I can only raise to six.
How much can I bet?
How much can I bet? I will raise to six. Did you catch when I bet out and I bet three on you as a joke when we were playing that hand with the kings? Did you even catch that?
I did not catch that.
I go $3, and like everybody looks at me like I'm an idiot. I'm like, oh, okay, four. It was a joke, and nobody got it. I'm like, come on. Because it's me and you. We were in the hand together. We're heads up. I just thought it'd be funny.
If it's a joke and no one gets it, was it really a joke?
Yeah, it's not a joke. If a joke is told and no one's there to understand it, does it get a laugh? I don't know. Okay, so yeah, I would raise here, obviously.
I can't just call tens. I guess you got to know the table, too. If it's a limp-happy table, I don't know whether I really want to start building a pot with tens out of position. But generally speaking, I want to thin the field, if I can here, with the raise and try to get heads up or at least three-handed with my tens, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, well, our hero decides to call. And again, you know, maybe had a read on the table and knew that it was a limp-happy table. And if that's the case, then I'm probably going to limp along and hope I hit a set. But so he calls. We get another caller, two folds, and a raise behind us. Another call.
Oof.
See, so maybe he does know what's going on here. A fold, the small blind calls, the big blind calls, the under-the-gun player calls. And it gets to us. What do we do now?
Well, you can't raise again. No one's going to fold, and you're only. I mean, I guess if you want to try to raise again to try to get a huge pot to flop to have the odds of flop a set, but I think you already are getting that now because the next bet's only going to be $3. So, I think you are your pot's big enough now. I still would just call. I don't think I'd raise again. They're not going to. It's not going to do anything except build a bigger pot for somebody to draw at and kick our butts. So I'm just calling.
Yeah, yeah, you're not going to get a fold with an out of raise here. So, you know, maybe you're feeling frisky and hoping to get more money in. So when you flop your two outer, you can punish them. But at this point, I'm going to hold on to that $3 and just call and hope for the best.
So how many players is it actually going to the flop now? Five?
17. well, the action's not done yet, though, Chris.
Because that's right.
Our hero does decide to raise.
Oh.
Everybody calls.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't think I like that. I mean, if I know the game, maybe there's a reason for that, but I don't think I like that in this situation.
So seven-handed it is.
Wow.
So we succeeded in getting another $21 in the pot, but seven-handed with pocket tens, we're going to need a lot of help to win this hand.
Let me ask you then. So you're looking at – is it just me or are we looking at already like $60 in this pot?
Yeah, well, seven times nine.
Yeah, it's 63 in the rake, right? So you're looking at about – so, I mean, really, I'm taking this to the end, I think, unless it gets really ugly.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in. It just depends on what flops here. But, yeah, I mean, oof, big pot.
Yeah. I mean, if it's like ace, king, queen, three diamonds, I'm probably getting out. But if it's something kind of raggedy or whatever, I can't get away from this for a while at least.
All right, the flop comes deuce of hearts. Tray of clubs, ace of diamonds. Not exactly what we're going to see. Certainly, you don't want to see an ace. And with both the blinds in, I don't like the little cards there, too, because people can get crazy in the blinds.
Yeah.
And I guess the only thing that I really like about this is the rainbow flop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder what that guy raised with when he made the initial raise. But he could have anything. He could have nines, like everybody else in the world.
Yeah. So, well, you know, the other interesting thing, too, is that we took the lead in this hand by the final raise, which technically, I guess, was a check raise.
Yeah.
We just called, limped, and then raised. So, but it's tough, as you probably found in limit this week. It's tough to represent a hand all the way to the end in limit.
Yes, it is. It's hard to get anybody to fold anything at any limit that we played. You know, I know I took the initiative and everything, and maybe I do bet here. I don't know. Maybe I, but it has to get checked to me first, so I'll see what happens.
All right, well, that's exactly what happens. We have three checks to us, and the action's on us.
You know, I don't, as I was saying how I was probably going to take this pretty far with it, I don't see anybody folding who has any kind of hand that could call a $9 raise or $9 total bet. And some of these were two bets cold people were calling, so... I don't know if I can bet there, even though I raised myself. I think I have to check and just see the turn.
Yeah, here's the tough thing is that we still have some players behind us.
Yeah.
So the last thing you want to do is bet and get raised and have to put $6 in on a flop that's not to your liking.
Yep.
And just by checking, you know, it's not like an old limit where you're kind of giving up a little bit. You know, why isn't he betting out if he has an ace? I mean, in the limit, this is kind of common, right or wrong, that people will check the flop when they hit it.
Yeah,
and then hope to get somebody else to bet and then start to punish them. So I don't think there's any downside really to checking here.
Yeah, because like you said, you probably have, what, 3 to 4 people behind you still. And, you know, you don't want to have to face two bets cold, you know. And, you know, and that's the other thing, too. I think you're getting your information, too. If somebody bets and then you get a raise and then a call and it gets to you, you're like, I'm fairly certain now I'm beat with that many people, and I'm not going to try to drag along for my two outer. So I like the check here.
Yeah, because it's a rainbow flop, and really the 4-5 is probably unlikely, though it could be possible. Right. If I check here and there's a bet and a check raise, then I know I'm way behind, and it's going to be real tough for me to call those two bets. But if I bet here and someone raises, I don't know whether I get that much more information out of it. So
I do feel with seven players in and the way it went that the winning hand is going to be a set. I don't know, and obviously I'm not putting people on hands here yet, but it just feels like that many people are set mining because of the odds and the amount of callers. I just feel like a set might win this hand. But pure guess.
Well, our hero decides to bet out. Okay. And, you know, again, you can defend that since we took the lead. And, you know, maybe, you know, if – again, it goes back to your knowledge of the table. If people are real pre-flop happy but get out if they miss everything, I mean, it's one way to narrow the field down. We obviously want to narrow it down.
Right.
And, you know, if we get raised at this point with this board, too, I got to think it's from an ace. So at least we'll know what we're up against an ace. With seven people, man, I got to think somebody's got an ace, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, especially with the action. If the action ends up being bet, raise, call or something, someone has an ace, and you can get away from it.
Well, the interesting thing is that we bet, and we get one folder, but everybody else just calls.
Oh, man.
So we thin the field by one, down to six. No one raised, though, which is interesting, but doesn't necessarily discount an ace. Just means we could be up against some weak aces.
Yeah, or a set.
And we really didn't get any information here. We just continued to build a pot. So our last two bets have done nothing really but to build a pot, I think, right?
Yeah. I think it's a good argument to not bet there. I would just check.
All right, well, the turn is the seven of spades. So our board now is a deuce of hearts, tray of clubs, ace of diamonds, seven of spades. So we definitely don't have to worry about any flushes. No straights got there. And once again, it's checked around to us.
Yeah. I just can't put $6 in, you know, with all of those callers. Someone's got an ace. Someone's got a set. I just can't. I would like to see the river for free if I could. So I'm going to check and see what happens. And if it gets back to, you know, where I'm closing the action somehow, maybe I'll call $6 to win what appears to be, what you said, six guys, so 18, so a $70 pot. Yeah. I think I might call 11 to 1 on my money to hit a set on the end, maybe. But I don't know. I can't bet here, though.
Yeah, at this point, there's no upside because, you know, normally in a limit hand, if there were draws, you could bet the turn if the draw didn't get there and get people to fold because I know they were going to have to call two bets. But still no draws here, so anybody still in probably has something.
Yeah, exactly.
So to bet again here, you know, you're really hoping that everybody's got like underpairs to you. And with six people, there's not enough underpairs left. So our hero does decide to check. He gets one check behind, and then a player bets out. One call before it gets to us and two folds. So we got two players in and one player left behind us.
Yeah, it's just too many. It's too many players involved in this hand. I think I have to let it go.
It's really hard to imagine that our tens are good. And if you put $6 in here, you're hoping for a two outer, which should be good at that point, you know, unless somebody has pocket aces.
Right.
But you know, a two outer, a lot of money in here, but oh boy. And this is really where it gets tough in limit too, because you call the turn, you almost have to call the river.
Yeah.
Because you have the odds in the river, even if you have with this hand to call. So your question now is to call $12. It's not whether to call $6.
Yep. Yeah. At least, you know, because even if you bet, there's still people behind you. I still think there might be someone behind you. So, yeah. No, I have to let it go here and just move on. You know, and that's the thing about limits. You lose your whole stack. You know, at least you can move on. You know.
And it'd be different if it's just one player, but now we've got another player that called too.
Yeah.
So, you know, one player could be trying to play frisky with something, I guess, maybe. But still, I would think I'd be behind to that player. But with two in, it's just, you know, I can't tell you how many times this week on the trip I thought about calling, but as soon as the bet came out and somebody else called, I'm like, yeah, can't be two people.
Yep, can't be two people. Just like you can't bluff two people. Or,
right.
You know, or you try not to bluff two people.
All right, well, our hero decides to call, and the player behind him calls too, so we're four-handed to the river. Which is the king of diamonds. So the final board is deuce of hearts, tray of clubs, ace of diamonds, seven of spades, king of diamonds. Checks to us.
How much can we bet? That's a real bad card for us.
Terrible card.
Yeah, I'm checking and hoping somebody else is checking because of the other caller and all that stuff. Maybe we get the showdown and see something miracle here. But I'm definitely checking and not betting.
Yeah, one of those
check folding.
Yeah, one of those rare check folds and limits, I think. So that's exactly what we do. And guess what? It checks around.
Wow. We have the best hand? You got to be kidding me.
All right. First player turns over nine of hearts, tray of hearts.
Oh, my God.
Pair of threes, and probably a complete drunken. Absolutely no reason.
Wow.
To call all those bets preflop with that hand. And then they hit a pair with an ace and stay in. Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's middle pair on that board and all that raising. And, oh, my God. 9-3 stayed in with that hand.
The next player turns over queen of spades, five of spades.
What?
Can't make this stuff up. Actual hand history.
What?
That's even worse. Didn't even have a pair there. No draw.
Nothing.
Really. Well, I needed a four for a straight. The player that woke up on the turn and bet, eight of diamonds, eight of hearts.
You know, I was going to say eights earlier. I didn't know who had the eights, but I thought when that seven came and someone bet, I thought maybe they had eights. I don't know who it was, but I thought maybe that could be the only hand that didn't have an ace in it. Wow. Well, let's get back to the queen of spades, king of spades hand again.
Queen of spades, five of spades.
Oh, I mean, five of spades. I mean, really? For a gut shot? And oh, my God. This is online.
Yeah, though I guess a gut shot had better odds to catch their hand than we did, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. But,
our hand had showdown value, too.
Right,
so.
But we had a better pair. He had nothing at the time, just a gut shot. And he called all his raises with queen five.
Yeah. So obviously two terrible players in this game, so I need to be able to find out when these players are playing and get in that game. But I think also interesting was the eighth hand. You know, we kept talking about how somebody had to have an ace. When it checks around with a pair, I might put that bet in. I guess which means that we probably should have put that bet in. You know, because if you're up against a bunch of people with weak aces, you might be able to get weak aces to fold.
Well, the problem, though, was that we were pretty early to act, so it's not like it checks around to us. It's a couple of checks with guys behind us.
I mean, they were in a better position to make that bet.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. So we won it, though, right? We win the pot.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, that's
nice pot.
Sick.
$102 on the pot, and with pocket tens and a hand where people were just morons all around, I think.
Well, it goes to show you my limit, the knowledge there. I thought for sure a set was going to win this hand just because so many, the sheer volume of people limp, call kind of thing. I thought for sure a set was going to get hit there, and wow. Jeez. The 9-3 and the queen 5. Oh, man, that's hilarious.
You just never know, do you?
No, that's just crazy.
Well, Will, we appreciate you sending in that crazy hand, and we will send you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games that comes from our good friends at element26.net. That's element deuce six numeral .net. Enjoy that. Hopefully it'll help you break down the hands like this again, and imagine this program will probably say, what? When you put this hand in there. No way they call it all those bets with that.
It'll say, what that?
So we'll enjoy that. And, you know, hey, Chris, looking forward to getting on the road again next week to Pennsylvania, Delaware, Baltimore, and having another hilarious retelling of stories.
Yes, let's this time when we drive around for 600 miles, let's put the radio on.
Yes, we just might do that.
Didn't do that this last trip, and that was incredible. So. All right, we're looking forward to the Keystone State. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.